Go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
UN Ambassador Nikki Haley is defending President Trump's decision to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. USA's Chris Barnes reports.
Ambassador Haley is saying the Trump administration sincerely feels it will move the peace process along, and she says it's only a recognition of reality.
In Jerusalem, you've got the parliament, you've got the president, you've got the prime minister, you've got the Supreme Court, so why shouldn't we have the embassy there?
Speaking there on CNN's State of the Union, for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Police have a suspected suicide bomber in custody after a pipe bomb went off this morning at New York's Port Authority bus terminal. Mayor Bill de Blasio is calling it an attempted terrorist attack. The suspect's bomb either malfunctioned or somehow went off prematurely inside a subway platform entrance. Four people were hurt, including the 27-year-old male suspect. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free, 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
The nominations for the 75th Annual Golden Globe Awards are out. Actress Sharon Stone announced the nominations for Best Motion Picture Drama.
Call Me by Your Name, Dunkirk, The Post, The Shape of Water, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
And actor Garrett Hedlund names the nominees for the Best Drama TV Series.
The Crown, Netflix. Game of Thrones, HBO. The Handmaid's Tale, Hulu. Stranger Things, Netflix. This Is Us, NBC.
And the nominees for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy are The Disaster Artist, Get Out, The Great Showman, I, Tonya, and Lady Bird. The Golden Globe Awards will be held at the Beverly Hilton Hotel on January 7th. Seth Meyers is hosting the show, and it will air on NBC. Apparently, girls are better than boys when it comes to problem solving. Alisa Z has more information.
Researchers at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development conducted a study of problem-solving techniques among teens. Overwhelmingly, they say, 15-year-old girls across the globe outperformed boys when it came to collaborative problem-solving. Reportedly, they say, girls show more positive attitudes toward relationships, meaning that they tend to be more interested in others' opinions and want others to succeed. Are you listening, boys?
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Weather this afternoon, a slight chance of snow after 1 a.m., mixing with sleet after 5 a.m., increasing clouds with a low around 29. Calm wind becoming southeast around 5 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Tuesday, a chance of rain and sleet before 7 a.m., then a chance of rain between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m., then a slight chance of rain and snow after 5 p.m. Lots of rain. Mostly cloudy with a high near 44. Southeast wind 6 to 9 miles per hour, becoming west in the afternoon. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New snow and sleet accumulations of less than a half inch possible. Tuesday night, a slight chance of rain and snow showers before 7 p.m., then a slight chance of snow showers between 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 18. West wind around 11 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 30. West wind 13 to 18 miles per hour with gusts as high as 30 miles per hour. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 15.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon and Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments at Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office. We have no paid staff. And as numerous people have told me over the course of time, it's great because there's no traffic jam going from the kitchen to the living room, which is true, unless my wife gets in the way. But what we try to do with NAMI is we try to help people who either have someone in their family who has a mental illness or someone themselves who have a mental illness get the right help and the right process to go on with their lives. We do that in numerous ways. One of the ways we do it is we have what they call a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course. In that course, they try to explain medications, side effects of medications, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. And they try to get the person taking the class to feel what it's like to be the person with the illness. Some of the other things we do is we have what they call a basics course, which is for families who have children under the age of 18 who may have ADHD or anxiety or whatever. And that's normally about a six-week course. All our courses and everything we do is free. The classes you have to register for, but that's it. It's all the binders and all the paperwork and everything they give out is free. We also have a support group that we run once a month, the third Thursday of every month, at 52 East Main Street in Flemington. And it's for people, and they can just talk, and everything is confidential, and people may have been going through the same thing you are or already gone through it and tell you what to help them. So, like I said, it's all confidential, and that you don't have to register for. You don't have to be a member of NAMI to attend. You don't have to be a member of NAMI to attend any of our classes either. If you have any questions or you want more information, all you got to do is call 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And we don't man the phone 24 hours a day, but we have a very nice young lady, woman, who checks the mail at least twice a day. And we promise you we will get back to you as soon as possible. Today we are very privileged to have with us Robin Marks, who is the Senior Community Relation Addiction Specialist. Boy, that's a mouthful. At Princeton House Behavioral Health. Robin and I go back a long way, and I always ask Robin how Princeton House got started because I just love the story. So, Robin, welcome. Thank you for coming, and how did Princeton House get started?
Okay. Thank you, Larry. Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
Yes, I work as a community liaison with Princeton House, and to represent it well, I have to know the history. So it turns out Princeton Medical Center used to be a small little community hospital on Witherspoon Road in Princeton. And they had, 45 years ago, they had a small little behavioral health unit, and they wanted to put it off-site and just let it be its own entity. So they bought, they looked around, and they found that Kitty Carlisle. Now, where do we know Kitty Carlisle?
I knew that was coming.
What was she on before?
She was on a television show. I remember that, but now the name of it went out of my head.
What's My Line? Yeah. And she was an entertainer, and she had purchased this building to make it kind of like a nursing home for those in the entertainment industry. But she was a performer, an entertainer, and not a business person. So when the University of Medical Center of Princeton approached her, she said, fine, here, buy it out from me. And so 45 years ago, they did. And then it was shaped like a wagon wheel, so there was a big spoke in the middle with these different hallways leading mm-hmm. off of it. And designated then, 45 years ago, because mental health treatment has come very far in 45 years, it used to be just a psychiatric wing and a detox and rehab wing. Done. The doors weren't locked or anything else. And when you came in, insurance gave you 30, 60, 90 days. So people would come in with suitcases and trunks and kind of like just, you know, just settle in for the course of their treatment. Under that, then everything had expanded, and then the onset of HMOs. So then it was restricted, and you had to go to a care management, and you had to get mm-hmm. referrals, and, you know, that was the whole 90s was the switchover. But as that was happening, ours is a hospital base, so we were always adherent to JCO rules and industry high standards. Right. But some places just kind of ran out like they wanted to. And so in the 90s and all the really more format to these places started mm-hmm. occurring. And the insurance company helped shape that. There's pros and cons to the insurance companies right. being involved. Now, let's fast forward to 2017, almost 18. Princeton, the University Medical Center of Princeton, which Princeton House's behavioral health arm of, is now going to merge with Penn Medicine. And so that will be happening in the next few months.
Princeton House is? Princeton Hospital is? Or
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which has moved from the site in Princeton across onto Route 1. It's a brand new, beautiful building, state-of-the-art, evidence-based for how they even set up the room. It's just kind of a wonderful thing to behold. Because really, think about the hospitals in your area. When was the last time somebody broke ground on a brand new hospital? They put on wings, they redo units, but to just start right. build a whole new hospital with the technology now, it's really a wonderful thing to have witnessed. I mean, we took a hard hat tour when it was just girders, and now it's a you know, beautiful hospital that's adding on different components as we go along.
You know, it's amazing that it seems like all the hospitals, or most of the hospitals, are being bought out by other hospitalizations or other hospitals or whatever, the Hunter Medical Center, Somerset County, Robert Wood Johnson took over Somerset County Hospital. And, you know, it just seems like that's the mode for this time of year mm-hmm. or this stage, you know. So, but hey, you know, if it works, you know, if they can get more money or they can get more, you know, help more people that way, you know, I'm for it, but, you know, have to wait and see.
Yeah. So, Robin, once again, Princeton House is merging with, did you say Penn Med?
Penn Medicine.
Penn Medicine, uh-huh, which is located in Pennsylvania.
The Philadelphia
area. Yeah. Right. Okay. So the facilities will be separate still, or?
It turns out when the two places are both, we're both a nonprofit. Okay. So nonprofits merge versus being bought out.
Okay.
Right. So we will just, it's a wonderful relationship
right.
because they're a teaching medical hospital.
Okay.
So they could do, they could send okay. externs, interns, residents, and really utilize what we have as Princeton House, as well as then our our staff can be taught by the Penn Medicine.
Right.
So
right.
It's a really nice give and take that we'll be able to have.
Okay.
All right, I got to ask, Robin. What does a senior community relations specialist actually do? Besides come on the radio.
Yeah, come on the radio. Give out cookies. No. Actually, what any business really needs is a face. And especially when it has to do with behavioral health, mm-hmm. when you're talking about mental health issues or addiction issues, it's like, oh, who do I go to? Who's a safe person? What, you know, I don't know how to even touch that. And so somebody like myself who comes into the community, and I go to meetings, I go to, you know, I go to the DCPNP, I go to the addictions meetings, I go to the county professional advisory council on mental health issues, I go to things where I met you, like symposiums, just twofold, to make sure that the community knows who they can reach out to with just a question. It doesn't have to be about something. But I've gotten calls. I got a call recently from an elderly gentleman who was 70 years old, realized he was addicted to Percocet, and he just said, I don't even know if you have people that are 70 years old addicted to Percocet. And he didn't want treatment. He got my number somehow, and I hear that you are just somebody I could ask questions to. And that's... Yeah. That's what I want to be, and the people in my position around the state.
Okay.
Your go-to guy, mm-hmm. you know, gal.
Sure.
Gal in your case, yeah.
Right. Okay.
What does Princeton House exactly do, and what does it center on, basically?
Well, I'm so glad you asked me that.
Yeah, I bet you are.
Princeton House is, like I said, the behavioral health arm of Princeton Medical
Right.
Group. So we have three levels of service. We have inpatient psychiatric and behavioral health services. So if someone has a psychotic break, or their depression is debilitating, or their addiction is so much that really the family fears for their life, where do you go? Well, you go someplace where it's a hospital based and it's safe, and somebody, we're a medical model, so you are seen by a psychiatrist every day. It's 24-hour nursing. It's nutrition. It's when you come in to any hospital, the first thing you want to do is diagnose. Why are you here? What are we hoping to do for you to get you on your way? So hospitals is just for acute reasons. And so that's what we have. So we have a 110-bed adult facility in Princeton. And then with the insurance, going back to that, has made the length of stay shorter and shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
So you have 5 days for detox and maybe 7 to 10 days for those with co-occurring addiction and mental health issues, or maybe 7 to 10 days for a straight psychiatric issue. Because you have to stabilize that person before you're going to say, okay, you're good to be released now, you know, or discharged. And so as the length of stay got shorter, you were really discharging more fragile patients. So we started opening up outpatient services in the catchment area around Princeton House so that these people would have some place to go. We could line them up. And again, our outpatient services are medical model. So when you're given an appointment to come into Princeton House outpatient versus inpatient, your first meeting is with a psychiatrist, and you spend an hour with that doctor who reviews your medication, reviews your history, goes over everything, and he knows our treatment. He's hired by Princeton House. It's not one of these contract providers that come in and says, well, we have a doctor once a week on Tuesdays. I mean, this is where they come in every day to go to work. So the doctor always knows what's going on in the milieu.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, maybe the straight psych is very fragile right now. This person is suffering more from a depression and just needs maybe something more in a co-occurring or a wellness track versus this is medication for psychosis. You know, kind of like you see it in NAMI.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same sort of levels of need.
Right.
And so... We have 5 outpatient centers. Then we started finding and this is why I love working at Princeton House, different episodes of treatment are really needed for different people. Which,
right.
Of course, you go, of course, you know, it's like, if I broke my leg and went to physical therapy, I wouldn't need what you need. I'm smaller and have smaller bones, you know,
right.
So it's
right.
just not going to be the same. So when you have two people showing up for depression, one's a man and one's a woman, well, this one is manifested this way. This one's just not even getting out of bed and showering. So that's, and why is it depression? Is it a physiological one, or is it a cause and effect? Did the woman go through something that just kind of like, you know, dropped her down? So we started a women's program. And then over the course, we have very bright clinicians that really do evidence-based research to find out what modalities are the best mm-hmm. to use. So our women's program actually is nationally known at this point. And we have, in every location that we have just general outpatient services, we also have a women's track.
Okay.
And it's so specific that the staff and the patients who are currently there have to vote if the psychiatrist is a man in the women's program. The staff and the patients, it's like thumbs up, you know? It's really like that. They just want to be sure that they are true to their cause.
Right. That's interesting. That's really tuned in to women's needs.
Mm-hmm.
To feel comfortable. That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said there was five centers, outpatient sites?
Mm-hmm. We have five. There's two in Princeton. We have one that's a general outpatient psychiatric, you know, all mm-hmm. levels. Then we also have a woman's specific program that's not even on the same grounds as the other outpatient site. Hamilton is a big one, and that has starting children as young as five all the way to older adults. So that's a very large site. Same with our North Brunswick site, five to older adults. Moorestown, which is down by Cherry Hill.
Right.
That's another one, five all the way to older adults. And then our Eatontown location by Tinton Falls is just women's.
Is there any for just men?
No, but Larry, what a good question. You would think that I was feeding him these questions. With all the evidence-based research we did for the women's programs, all of a sudden it's like, hello, I'm a man. What about me? You know, I have trauma issue also. And so one of our psychiatrists at the Princeton location actually is renowned for men's trauma. And she put together an evidence-based program mm-hmm. For men's trauma specific. And that's, it's interesting because the women, just society norms, women are more accustomed to reaching out for help than men are. So to have a man come, they come because their issues are really affecting how they're living. They're losing a job. They're not getting out of bed in the morning. They're preoccupied. They're not here. So they come and they meet with the psychiatrist and said, oh, you'll be perfect for the men's trauma. Well, that first day that they walk into a group setting and there's all these men sitting around, the psychiatrist said once that a guy opened the door and just kind of peeked in, and the other guys go, come on in, it's okay in here, it's all right. And she said when the group says that versus somebody in the profession,
right,
it just means that much more.
Sure.
Right. They're accepted. Mm-hmm. I had a quick question. Now, are any of these the IOP program all day from 9 to 5 or 9 to 3? Or
you again, perfect question.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Inpatient is 24/7, so there are levels of care. So from if you no longer need a hospitalization, but you still need a lot of care, but you can still go home at night, that's called a partial hospitalization. Okay. So you still have the nurses, the doctors, the therapists, the support, all of that. You have transportation, you have your meals, but you go home at the end of the day, and it's a partial hospital.
Right.
And usually people do that for about, in our system about 2 weeks. Just and so if you have a 7 to 10 day inpatient stay, then you have about a 2 week. So that's 3 weeks of hospital level care. And then if, you know, providing that the treatment team, the social worker, the nutritionist, the adjunct therapist, the doctor, or the nurse, all decide that, okay, let's try an IOP, like you said. That's intensive outpatient. So that's 3 hours a day, 3 days a week. Okay. So instead of going 9 to 3, 5 days a week, you can drop down and do half days and or the evenings or something like that. And then always we encourage you, the person, to be involved in whatever practitioner you have in their home environment. Like most people come in with either a therapist or a psychiatrist.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just for those folks out there who have heard of IOP, there's two kinds. There is intensive outpatient, and then there's involuntary outpatient.
That's new, yes.
And for those of you that don't know what involuntary outpatient is, it means somebody did something not, you know, maybe shoplifting or, you know, some minor burglary or something like that. And the court sees that the person has a problem and they tell them, well, you got a choice. You either go to IOP, which is
intensive outpatient,
or involuntary outpatient. If you go to the involuntary outpatient, you have that choice, and I will send you. Or you can go to intensive outpatient and on your own. If the court sends them and they don't go or they drop, then they go to jail. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's still the same IOP, but it's, you know,
a different level.
It's got a different level, and it goes in two different ways, you know. So just to clarify, you know. A little bit.
Yeah, because with the outpatient programs, unless you're court ordered to go in, it's really a voluntary program. Nobody,
right.
And that's one thing that I help the community a lot about is when you love somebody and you know they need help, how do you get them to get that help when they say no? Because it's voluntary. And that's really a quagmire for a lot of people.
Right. You know, because especially if they're an adult.
Oh, especially.
You know, say they're 19 years old, you know, they'll say no. And what are you going to do? You know,
right.
Unfortunately, there's, you know, very few options you have, you know, and it's sad, really, you know, when you think about it. Now, I know that most of the hospitals, say, in the area, or not necessarily just in Hunterdon County, but the medical center I know, and they'll have X amount of beds at Princeton House.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have X amount of beds at such and such. They'll have X amount of beds at such and such. And I know that's probably with the rest of the area. You know, it could be from Mercer County and whatever, Somerset County, however. That there's a certain amount of that 100-and-some-odd bed you said that is designated for?
It's called short-term care.
Right,
yeah.
Right. My question and problem with some of it is that if the beds are filled, say there's two beds available to Hunterdon County.
Mm-hmm.
If those two beds are filled, now what do they do with them?
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
They look someplace else, or they look here, they look there. And if there's nothing, then they have to keep them in a medical center.
Mm-hmm.
And they could be there for 5, 6, 7 days, depending if there's no bed available.
Right.
And that's sad when you think about it.
Oh, it's horrible for the person who's sitting in the ER needing and wanting the help, and maybe not even necessarily even wanting it. Sometimes these are committed patients.
Right, right.
That they have to sit. It's a log jam. Is what it is, because Hunterdon has two beds at Princeton House.
Right. And that I know for a fact,
yeah.
You know.
And if there are already two people from Hunterdon in those beds, and the length of stay on the short-term care might be a little bit longer because they're at the level of what they needed committing, they just don't move quickly.
Right.
And right. And Hunterdon County did it as a demographic study about their population. Well, how many short-term care beds do we need? And so if those two beds are full, and you have somebody that walked into the ER the same day that person got admitted.
They've got 10 days. They've got quite a few days because there aren't that many other short-term places to go to, I don't believe.
Well, it's interesting. The short-term care beds at Princeton House are almost a hospital within a hospital because, for the most part, Princeton House is voluntary, meaning that you have to agree to be there, mm-hmm. which actually then you're one step ahead of the game already,
right.
you know. For the few little contracted beds that we have with Middlesex, Somerset, and Hunterdon, is just a small section of those 110 beds.
Right.
I think they maybe come to only 15.
Uh-huh.
And they're on their own unit because if you're committed, that's different than voluntary. And that's just a different
sure.
population.
Right. Right.
So the voluntary patients walk down the hall and go into the dining hall and have activities throughout our facility, where the short-term care patients usually stay in that one area. What sometimes helps the log jam is if somebody goes to psychiatric screening and they're there and they're you know, fit to be tied because somebody made them go to psychiatric screening. Psychiatric screening says, well, you know, you need to go someplace. And then after a while, the person calms down a little bit and says, okay, I'll voluntarily go into a hospital. Well, then you've got the option of, you know, hundreds more beds.
Right, right. Does Princeton House take walk-ins?
No. Because we have at the medical center, the new medical center uh-huh. on Route 1, has an ER. And you could walk into the ER, and then we have a psychiatric screening.
Okay.
But we're not a designated psychiatric screening center. Just when they were building the new hospital, they said there's, you know, if you've sat in any general ER, you see somebody with his hand wrapped in gauze who's bleeding. You see somebody else who's like, you know, like clutching their stomach in the other corner. So when they devised the ER, they said there are five different beds of ER you could go to. So if you're a child, boom, you go
right.
straight into the child unit. Which is so much better than watching the guy whose hand's bleeding in front of
sure.
you.
Right. Sure.
If you're general med, you go into another one. Well, we also have one that's psychiatric and addiction. That's a whole other one. So you get triaged and placed there. But that's just because we're newly designed. Other hospitals just don't have the room to do that yet.
Yeah, right. Sure. We should talk a little bit about, because we're getting into the holiday season here, the dual diagnosis. You want to get into that?
Absolutely. So dual diagnosis means two diagnoses. And sometimes you don't know really which came first. A good case scenario would be a child comes back from college. And all of a sudden, you as a parent see that this is not the kid I sent off in September. And yet you just know in your gut. And you're sitting there wondering, is it drugs? Is it personality issues? What's going on here? And so until you can rule out or rule in one, you just say they're dual diagnosis because they've said, yeah, I started smoking pot, started drinking and drinking those beers on the weekend. Okay, are they in the beginning of a substance abuse diagnosis? And then they also tell you, and the stress, oh my God, I wasn't prepared for the stress at college. And I get so crazy with anxiety that I just can't even move. So I drink a beer, I smoke a joint, and I go to class. Okay, help me. Which one did come first? You know?
Right, right.
And so that would be a dual diagnosed. Some people carry that dual diagnosis for the rest of their lives because they do grapple with substance abuse. They do feel better if they drink a six-pack. And then you have to go to the addiction side. Well, is it use, abuse, or dependence? So are you using it like you would at a wedding? It's like, oh, I'm a knucklehead. I drank too many champagnes at a wedding. Or is it abuse, like every Friday and Saturday I have to be with my friends and we all get loaded all the time?
Or every day.
Or every day where you wake up and it's like, I have to have it every day, otherwise my hands shake and my body feels horrible.
When you have someone who comes in with a dual diagnosis, mental health issue and an addiction, mm-hmm. either alcohol or drugs, which one do you treat first?
It's really, what is the most presenting problem? So you could have somebody come in and they say that they're a heroin addict. They use heroin and so the layman would go, well, of course that's primary because you still have to detox them. But you have to look at the whole person. That's right. Just right now. How had they been functioning up until when they were using heroin? Had they been sneaking parents' booze at 13, smoking weed at 15, starting more of the harder core stuff, the Oxys and the Percocet, and then all of a sudden by 21 they're IV drug users. Is it that, or it's all of a sudden you look back and even their school reports show that by fifth grade they couldn't sit in their seat, they were easily distracted. They would start crying at their desk for no reason. Again, which one is primary?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So you basically try to deal with them equally?
Yep. We have a dual diagnosis unit. And on that one, it's primary psych, secondary drug and alcohol. But they would go to both equally. So you would have a group therapy for, let's say, identifying feelings, which is more of a mental health theme.
Mm-hmm.
But in the afternoon, it's like, okay, you need to go to trigger relapses. What are the things in your environment that make you want to use? And it could be as simple as, this is interesting, one woman once said that, I get triggered every time I go to a department store. Like, well, that makes you want to drink? What? Going to the department? She goes, but when I drank, I used to do cocaine. So when somebody is at the checkout line and they're going like this with their credit card, just tapping it, waiting, that triggers her because that's how you cut up cocaine, is with a credit card, and that she would start just getting dysregulated and have to put her clothes down and walk out of the store. So that's what we try to have the person explore within themselves. What is your trigger?
Right.
And I'll tell you, I don't go to a store now that I see somebody doing that I don't think of cutting cocaine. It triggers me about a patient.
Right.
So shopping online was probably her answer.
Yeah, exactly. Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Is it harder for folks with a drug or alcohol addiction or someone with a mental illness to stay on course during the holidays? Or isn't it, or doesn't it matter?
Bad for both.
I was going to say it doesn't matter. It's bad for both. Or it's good for both. Sometimes people are away from their family and their family is their biggest support, so coming home is good. On the other hand, some people have left the home, found their way in the world, functioning the best that they can, and to come home and be with the cousin that always teased him as a youngster, and the aunt that has no filters and will say anything and then Uncle Charlie's over in the corner drinking bourbon,
Right.
And I would think with all the parties, I was at a party this weekend, and it's a tradition at this party that they heat up the sugar and then they pour it into the wine and season it and they pass around a cup to everyone. Now, what if you're an alcoholic and you can't drink? It's the peer pressure is, I would think, would be almost enormous to not take that cup.
Well, it's interesting because I'm also a woman in long-term recovery, and these are scenarios, perfect scenario. Or you walk into a party and they go, what do you want to drink? And it's like, well,
Pepsi.
Really, what I'd love to drink, but I just can't drink anymore. Something like that. It's for those that are newly sober or newly clean, it's you really have to be on top of your support system. So if you know you're going to a family party and you know your family is, the culture is that wine and beer or something like that that is very harmless, that's use of alcohol. For those without addiction issues, that's kind of a fun thing. Somebody like me, it's just like it gets the blood boiling a little bit. So, but I know I've gone through enough holidays and events that I know I make sure I either have in the car a bottle of water or I scout it out as soon as I come in. They say something like that, here, have it. And I go, no, I'm okay, thank you. They go, no, no, go ahead, have it. And sometimes I say, well, you don't have enough. Because if I'm going to start drinking, you're not going to have enough.
Is it easy to just say, I don't drink, or is that hard?
You can say, I don't drink. Mm-hmm. And now with more of the wellness and the sense of holistic and healthy living, that is a little bit easier now than it was, like, let's say, the 60s, where everybody had Manhattans for lunches. If any of your colleagues walked in at lunchtime with liquor on their breath, we'd all go, you know, what are you doing? But just a generation ago, that was common practice.
You know, it's ironic because I never liked beer. I couldn't stand the smell of it. Hard liquor, a little Jack Daniels. But when I got out of the service, I quit, and I haven't drank since. So when people say, you know, oh, have one, I just, no, thank you. You know, I'll take the iced tea or a Pepsi or something, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and they don't, if you say no, they, oh, you sure? Yeah, I'm positive. You know, Pepsi mm-hmm. or iced tea will be fine. You know, Coke, whatever. You know, and they don't push.
Mm-hmm.
The people that don't know me, those that know me don't even bother, you know.
Yeah.
But, and it's just like, I quit smoking 28 years ago. If somebody lights up a Marlboro and I'm there and I smell the Marlboro, I have to walk away because I have an addictive personality.
Because you want it.
And I would want, and I'd start smoking again.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they put me on an operating table, turned me upside down, scraped my vocal cords with polyps and said that's the only time they could do it. The next time they'd have to take them out. And I'd be talking through a hole in my chest, and I'd, no, thank you, that's not for me, I'll quit smoking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand the temptation, whether it's alcohol or whether it's drugs or whether it's, you know, just to me it's cigarettes and, you know, or Marlboro specifically. The others I don't care about. Mm-hmm. But Marlboro is what I smoked for years. And I walk away. I have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So for some people, maybe they need to avoid parties altogether if it's really that difficult.
Absolutely.
Right?
Especially in early recovery.
Yeah, sure.
And the nice thing about, not everybody is a member of the 12 Steps organizations, Alcoholics mm-hmm. Anonymous or Narcotics mm-hmm. Anonymous, but there's Smart Recovery. There's other support groups that really they have holiday parties. Because if this is your first holiday without any substances, you're kind of, the floor is a little shaky underneath you.
Sure.
Like you said, since you don't drink, you say, I just say no. But when you're in recovery, you feel like you have a scarlet letter on you that everybody knows you're just one step away from going down that rabbit hole again.
Right.
And so when you say, no, honest, I really don't want one, your heart is racing and everything else like that, because it's like, Are they looking at me because they know I'm an alcoholic? I know I'm somebody in addiction recovery. You know, it just is a different physiological thing.
Right, right.
Well, you go fight or flight when you're around Marlboros. You're flight.
I'm flight. I'm gone because I know me. You know, and I got to ask. You've been in recovery for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you still find the holidays difficult? And if so, what do you personally do to get through them?
That's a very good question. Now, all of a sudden, if it's not talking about Princeton House, which is very easy because it's not emotionally charged,
yeah.
But now it's me.
And we don't have to
I'm fine with it. Actually, I enjoy sharing now because I feel very strong as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
I'm closing in on 31 years, so I got sober when I was 31. which I just gave away my age. In case you were thinking I was really young.
You are. Compared to me, you're very young. Remember me? I've been married 53 years, got married when I was 20. Remember we talked about that before? So, yeah. You know, you are young. Yeah.
So a lot of people aren't comfortable sharing that they're in recovery for several reasons. The stigma is still there. People judge you by that. And also, the person who's in recovery knows that their addiction is just a few layers underneath. That if something happened, if I had one drink, I would go head first into it again. But after 30 years, I feel strong, and I feel there's not a lot of people to look up to, like, oh, that person's been clean and sober for 30 years. So people don't know what recovery looks like at all. And you've got to figure 1 in 10 people are in recovery. So the next time you're at ShopRite, especially before a snowstorm, when it's packed, 1 in 10 of those people have addiction disorders, and they're either recovering or they're in the throes of it.
And if they're tapping their credit card.
And they're tapping their credit card and running out the door. And actually, it's interesting even to go into a liquor store before a snowstorm, because these are the people, like, the idea of being without alcohol for that one day, or cigarettes or anything else, I'm going to make sure I have my supply of really what I need for my addiction before I'm going to buy food. So I share now. My children are also older, so I don't have to worry about them getting teased. Oh, your mom's a drunk. They're adults and they embrace it. Although they didn't know till they were later, because I decided to share with them when they understood even what the concept of that was all about. And that was just a personal choice. Some people bring their children into AA because AA meetings because it's a supportive, warm environment. So if somebody's coming home, to answer your question, going to those meetings and just getting a nice dose. Some people go to yoga classes or meditation classes, just something to ground themselves and remember, okay, this is why I don't use. So that's always an idea.
Right. Well, I certainly don't judge. My mother was an alcoholic and never sought help, but she was a functioning, high functioning. You just knew about it at night.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I have a lot of, and several of my brothers and sisters had that issue, too. I was fortunate. It didn't hit me, but I usually don't drink very much because I know I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't drink very much because I don't like it anymore, you know, but, you know.
So just think of it, if you went to a park with your family, the 1 in 10 rule, you've got 5 to cover the other 50, right there.
Yeah.
How do you find that people who come to your organization who have a mental health issue, not an addiction, not dual diagnosis, but just a mental health, how do they deal with the holidays? Because I know that it's a bad time of year for them also.
Oh, absolutely. I think of the Christmas carols you hear on the radio. May your days be bright. And all of a sudden,
listen to her sing. Wow.
Well, it's the acoustics in here. I did sound pretty good, huh? So here you have it coming from the radio in your car to the stores you're going into. The expectation is that you have to be on your A game. You have to be joyful and kind and wonderful. And if you're always grappling with a dysthymia, just a low-grade depression all of your life, and you're watching somebody coming in bright and joyful, it's just like, it's harder during that period.
Do you have anything you would recommend to someone who have either alcohol or drug addiction or a mental illness or both, how they can stay clean and sober and get through the holidays?
Well, you mentioned it yourself with the NAMI support group. Sometimes being with those that share a common issue, just sharing the tips. you know, it's like, oh my God, I walked into ShopRite and I had to turn around and walk away because it just was overwhelming to me. So when you can go to a group and other people are sharing, well, I just don't go to ShopRite. I go shopping on Sunday morning, you know, with somebody that I care about. We just get our needs met and in and out of there. Also, a private therapist. You know, if you really have a mental illness that you'll have for your life, you talk to your therapist at the beginning of December, or maybe even before Thanksgiving. Oh, it's the holiday season. Maybe it's time to increase the meds a little bit, just because I need that increase of serotonin. Right. But I'm pulling from it the whole time because I'm fighting the environment. So right now I might need a little bit more because I'm pulling much more down right. from it. And then after the holidays, titrate back to what your even keel is, because the world's at an even keel at that point.
And I tell some people, too, that I said, well, what do you do normally, like, for relaxation? Oh, I do yoga. Oh, I read. Oh, I go for a walk. Well, do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if going for a walk is your thing, it's my wife's thing, and we live in a country, so going around a block for her is 2 miles. So I'm serious. So, you know, she goes, so I'm going for a walk. Okay, see you in about a half hour, 45 minutes, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But if that's what it takes, mm-hmm. do it. Mm-hmm. If take 10 minutes or a half hour or whatever you can spare, read your book if you want, if you enjoy reading, or do your yoga, or meditate, or sit on the back porch and meditate.
Right.
You know, I've never been into meditation a lot, but when Las Vegas shooting happened, it really struck me, and I went on the back deck. We have a fairly large back deck, and like I said, we live in the woods, and I just was sitting there, just looking at the trees and listening to the birds and see the squirrels running up and down, and it was calming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you know, I've suggested meditation for other people, but I've never really done it myself, you know mm-hmm. what I mean, until that time. And it really helped, mm-hmm. you know, because I was so ticked off that, you know, it just, mm-hmm. rather than get into it, it's, you know,
yeah.
but it helped.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suggest to people, do whatever helps you.
Right.
What do you enjoy doing, mm-hmm. you know? It doesn't matter what it is.
It doesn't.
No. I mean, it something could be washing your car, if that's what, you know, cut your grass, if that's what trips your trigger, you know.
Right, right.
It's fine, you know. But so it's just, you know, everybody has a different thing that they like to do.
Exactly. Okay?
I'm a big reader, and I go to the gym. Mm-hmm. Those are my two things I really like to do. Well, when I go to the gym, I, you know, something's on my mind. I'm working out. You know, by the time I come out of the gym, it's gone. You know, mm-hmm. I've gotten past it. Or I read, you mm-hmm. know. And then I'm concentrating on the book rather than
the thoughts.
What's
just
the thoughts
turning.
In the head? Yeah,
yep.
right. Yep. Exactly. You know. We're almost out of time. We have about 2 minutes left.
Wow.
Yeah, see?
Fast, isn't it?
You talk well, don't you? Only kidding. If someone wanted to reach out to you or Princeton House, how would they go about doing it? Is there a website, a phone number? You can
yes.
give either one.
People can contact me directly. My cell phone that is
Pardon
through
me.
Princeton House is the number is 609-904-3300. And that one, I'm sorry, 609-902-3006.
Why don't you repeat that one?
Okay.
The new one, the correct
one. My cell, mm-hmm. Robin Marks' cell, is 908.
I'm sorry.
609.
You want me to give you a cell? See, I got it, you know.
I let my guard down a little bit. That's it. 609-902-3006. And being the community liaison, any call I get, I can answer, or I know where to send you.
Right.
And I get calls that don't have to do with Princeton House. It's just a community member. What do I do about? And I say, boom, 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 just because I've been doing this a while.
Right.
Now, if you're calling Princeton House and you're worried about a loved one and you think you need the inpatient hospital, that is 1-800-273-8255. 242-2550.
Okay.
Well, and the outpatient is a different one. And,
okay.
And remember where I said there are five locations? You don't have to figure out which location.
No, just call Princeton House.
Princeton House, and that number is 888-437-1610.
Well, we thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Well, thank you, you very much.
And you know you're coming back. I'm going to have you back. Yeah. You know that.
I enjoy doing this. It's nice to have another guest, too. So it's my pleasure. It really is my pleasure.
And it's ours having you.
Yes,
you
know. Thank you, Robin. And is it? Let's do the website real quickly, too.
It's princetonhouse.org.
Oh, okay. princetonhouse.org. Right.
We won't ask you to say the phone numbers again because, you know.
I'll start giving my childhood number out.
Tracy can give you. She was writing them all down. She can tell you what they are. But, no, seriously, Robin, it's always a pleasure having you. And, you have a lot of information to give to people and a lot of hope.
Because that's it. There is hope.
Right. It's not the end of the world, although it may seem like it, you know. And a lot of times people, it feels like it to them.
Right.
But there is hope out there. And what I tell a lot of the people with mental health issues is you're not alone.
Right.
And you're not alone if you have an addiction. You're not alone if you're alcohol or drugs. And you're not alone if you have a combination of mental health and alcohol or drugs. Mm-hmm. You are not alone. There are people out there who care. There are people out there who can help you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about, is helping people. And, you know, and that's what you do, and that's what we try to do, and that's what this radio show tries to do, get the word out to people. So with that, I will hope you have a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you, Robin.
And happy holidays to both of you, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, and we'll have you back.
Okay.
Remember, folks, we'll see you again next week, same time, same station, and mental health really does matter.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Everybody over!